This is Layla Mudin, RD. I see patients every day here at the Hoffman Center. If you require a nutrition consult with me, but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.
Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions pertaining to nutrition, medicine, health in general. And you can get questions to us via radioprogram@AOL.com. That's our email address. And it may take a couple of weeks before we catch up to your questions. We're a little backlogged, but that's a good thing.
Yeah, about 5-6 weeks.
Oh, seriously? Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So just keep listening.
So hang in there, everybody. We have an email from Aurora. My 47-year-old daughter, mother of four children, just had a hysterectomy. She also had a thyroidectomy 5 years ago, right after she was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis. She's an English teacher.
Pause.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What's going on with this person?
Ooh, lots of autoimmunity.
Lots of autoimmunity, right?
Yeah.
Okay. So she had her thyroid removed. She has had, you know, female issues that required a hysterectomy. And she's got an inflammatory autoimmune condition.
Yeah.
So this is a person in, you know, really, and this person's how old?
She's 47.
47.
Mother of four. And an English teacher.
Well, that's how you go pretty fast from being a young person to an old sick person, you know,
yeah.
I gotta say.
Yeah. So she takes Synthroid, and Aurora, her mother, is wondering, what other supplements should she be taking?
Well, that sounds like the kind of thing that we do
right
in practice. So I'm not going to opine on what type of supplements, but let's comment on this situation.
Yeah.
What are some of the common denominator issues that someone with so many problems has? Number one, they have autoimmunity. So it's very likely that if we take a history, this person's not consuming much in the way of fish, not getting enough omega-3s,
mm-hmm.
or conversely getting a lot of pro-inflammatory oils and fats that aren't healthy.
Gluten.
Potentially gluten. That
gluten
is a trigger very often associated with thyroid autoimmunity. So
yes.
Right there, that's an issue. But I know you just want to know what supplements to take because changing your diet is too demanding, right? We don't want to tax you out in terms of like, you got to change your diet. You just want to know what supplements to take to fix it all up.
Right. It doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
I'm sorry to say.
And it's not some kind of cosmic punishment either. You have to change your fuel.
So there would be some supplements associated with supporting bone health.
Yes.
For sure, because of the hysterectomy.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if she's on hormone replacement. But you've got triple threat for osteoporosis. Hysterectomy. Thyroidectomy, where thyroid replacement sometimes promotes osteoporosis, and rheumatoid arthritis, which is associated with osteoporosis. So it would support bone with a good bone formula, well-absorbed, absolutely vitamin D. Vitamin D could be part of the problem here,
sure.
because in rheumatoid arthritis patients, there's often a vitamin D deficiency. Autoimmunity is tamped down by vitamin D.
Vitamin K.
And vitamin K to augment. We, you know, had a very nice podcast last week. With Dr. Goodman, who is an integrative cardiologist, and he emphasized the importance of vitamin K to protect the heart as well as to build bone. So,
DHEA.
DHEA might be an important thing to take because.
Especially in autoimmunity.
Yep.
Right? And for bone health.
Right.
As well. There's a whole slew of things. I mean, this is really a consult.
Yeah.
More than anything.
But it's also an example of where I think integrative medicine could have a lot of impact because in a person who's got so many, a multiplicity of problems, some big changes in diet, some big changes in lifestyle, some real, you know, aggressive supplementation, and adherence, you know, 1, 2, 3, 5, 10 years of adherence, and we're going to see some, you know, potential for that body to straighten out.
Right. Right. Aurora, we would, you know, urge your daughter to schedule such an appointment with, Aurora's down in Texas.
Mm-hmm.
If your daughter is near you, to find an integrative physician near
you. Exactly.
Unless you want to travel to New York to see Dr. Hoffman.
Which happens.
Yeah.
We do have people coming from afar.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you for your question. Wow. I mean, we can't even, you know, we can't even do a tip of the iceberg on this one because it's so complex.
Yeah.
So, anyhow. Thank you, Aurora. Best of luck to your daughter. Let's see. We've got an email from Mike. Hello. Thank you for your excellent podcast. The information presented every week is truly appreciated. I'm about to have surgery to repair a ruptured bicep tendon, a distal rupture. Can you tell me what supplements...
Sounds like a bodybuilder. That's a typical, you know, biceps curl kind of injury.
Mike wants to know what supplements will enhance the healing process. He's already going to be taking fish oil, curcumin, wobenzyme, vitamin C, vitamin D, and a multi.
He's already schooled. The only thing, you know, fish oil maybe not just right the few days before,
yes,
you know, the surgery, although that's not a particularly bloody surgery.
Right.
And, okay. You know, these are, you know, vitamin D certainly is helpful.
Mm-hmm.
C and zinc are very helpful for collagen repair.
Yeah.
You may want to take a source of a collagen, you know, hyaluronic acid or glucosamine chondroitin, because actually those are good for collagen formation.
Mm.
You know, lysine also is a constituent of collagen. You know, it's likely that the wobenzyme will reduce the inflammation,
sure,
that may occur afterwards.
Sure.
We prescribe that. That's a proteolytic enzyme that reduces swelling post-surgery.
I mean, a lot of people are doing more wobenzyme lately. I know bromelain. It's only one of the enzymes I know,
yeah,
but it's. Would you still consider bromelain in addition to the wobenzyme, or would you?
Well, some plastic surgeons just use bromelain. Just bromelain.
Yeah.
But I think the wobenzyme offers some additional,
some more
proteolytic enzymes. Best taken away from meals because if you take it before meals, it'll just help you digest your food.
Right.
You don't want it for that.
Yeah. Right. Okay, take some magnesium, Mike, because any kind of surgery, your magnesium will also go low. Okay.
And do the rehab.
Do the rehab. Best of luck to you, Mike. Oh, we've got an email from Pat. My husband has psoriatic arthritis and weaned himself off prednisone. He's not on any prescription drugs for arthritis, just over-the-counter anti-inflammatories. He also has hemochromatosis and now type 2 diabetes, takes 500 milligrams of metformin twice a day.
Oh, anyway, that sounds a little like the hysterectomy, the thyroidectomy, and the rheumatoid arthritis.
Right.
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 You know, so these are people who are not coincidentally sick in many ways.
Yeah. Yeah.
But let's actually take this from the perspective of hemochromatosis. What is hemochromatosis? It's an iron overload disease, which is hereditary.
Yeah.
And just like sickle cell or other hereditary diseases, you can get one hit from a parent, and that gives a mild form of it that may not even be noticed. Or you can have two hits, one from each parent, and you have a very full-blown disease, which causes your body to accumulate iron. So what are the consequences of that? Well, the type 2 diabetes, that's not coincidental. There is a type of diabetes associated with iron overload called bronze diabetes, associated with excess iron, where your skin gets darker and pigmented and your pancreas gets damaged. And you may even develop liver cirrhosis from the excess iron accumulation if it goes on too long. Often these diseases are only discovered like 20 years before they begin, because people are simply unaware until they get very sick. So, you know, the getting rid of the iron and using antioxidants to protect the body from the heavy metal free radical effect of the iron is important.
Anybody with hemochromatosis, though, you normally recommend that they get a phlebotomy
bloodletting. They get bloodletting.
Bloodletting.
They literally get, they take the blood and they throw it away.
Well, let's simplify this question. Yeah. Pat is asking, what should his ferritin level be?
Okay.
Where should it fall?
And that's an interesting question. I don't know precisely the answer, because there is an effort to lower your iron, and ferritin is a measure of iron. And ferritin is often sky high in these patients, like in the high hundreds or thousands, when it shouldn't be higher than 200 or 300.
Yeah.
So I think the goal of the hematologist is probably going to be to keep it under 50, I don't know.
Need a ferritin of 70 to 90
Conversely, you know, the other problem is that a lot of people are iron deficient, very high percentage. Yeah. We spoke about that in the beginning of part one. You know, at least 10% of women, 16% of African Americans are iron deficient. That'll cause actually attention deficit disorder, especially in young girls, hair thinning, weakness and fatigue, inability to exercise to your full potential and so on. Yeah. Even restless leg syndrome can be caused by low iron. But I think they're going to be more aggressive in someone who's so iron overloaded.
Right.
They want to really deplete their iron. So I would leave it to the hematologist. That's what they do.
Right.
That's a condition that they study. They'll know the answer, and they'll, that's one thing I entrust to the hematologist.
Yeah. It's also an opportunity to donate blood a few times a year, it's recommended.
I'm not sure that they take that blood and donate it. I'm not even sure.
Ah, okay, because it's going to be too high in iron.
Well, possibly.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Pat, we would urge that your husband find an integrative physician or make an appointment at the Hoffman Center, because this really is more of a consult than anything.
But, you know, just to give you an idea, we take a systems approach to people like that, and, you know, we try to identify themes. In this case, iron overload, diabetes certainly could be managed to some extent by diet. Although there could be an element of damage due to the hematromatosis.
That's true.
This may not be just ordinary diabetes that's acquired because of overeating and sedentary lifestyle.
Okay. Interesting. Thank you, Pat, for your email. Best of luck to your husband. Here's an interesting one. Okay, this is from Mike. Mike emails us, I have a 9-year-old granddaughter that is significantly overweight. The rest of the family, mom, dad, 3 siblings, are all normal weight. They don't keep a lot of junk food or sodas in the house. She doesn't overeat at meals. Doctors don't appear to have any idea what is wrong with her and blame it on her diet. Mm-hmm. To me, it doesn't appear to be her diet or a lack of exercise. What could be wrong with her? Mom is her biological mother, but she has a different biological father than other kids. If I could just interject off the bat here. She's 9.
Yeah.
She's about to enter a growth spurt.
Mm-hmm.
I would kind of wait that out a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very, very hesitant to put any child, especially young girls, on a weight loss diet. It's all a matter of keeping the right healthy foods in the house for everyone to eat.
And encourage activity.
Yes,
and,
yes.
And encourage self-esteem, too, because this is an age where that's a very emotionally devastating situation. But, you know, I will say that there could be a genetic component. We're just beginning to understand the genetics of overweight. There are some conditions where, you know, sometimes you see the people who literally look like whales walking down the street. And they're actually, in some cases, may literally be gluttony. But in some cases, people have a very serious genetic flaw that is rare, because you don't see that many people like that. You know, the people who are, you know, 600 or 800 pounds. Then, you know, there's the usual overweight type of folks, and they may have an FTO gene, or there are several genes. There's no single obesity gene, but they may have a sort of a perfect storm of genetic susceptibility to overweight.
Yeah.
So this is unfortunately it's a lifelong challenge to maintain optimal diet and optimal exercise.
Yeah.
And, I think it's a testimony to the complexity of this that they haven't developed a satisfactory medication for weight loss.
Right.
You know, all the medications are fraught with problems and side effects, and none work permanently.
Mm-hmm.
And, then we're left with gastric bypass. I'll also emphasize the importance of the microbiome. And, you know, they now have experiments that show that you can take the flora, you know, from
fecal transplant. Plant from a thin person
to a fat person, and you make the person thin. It's interestingly, and vice versa. If you inadvertently say you're trying to cure a serious disease like C. difficile, terrible bloody diarrhea with a fecal transplant, and you inadvertently obtain it from an overweight person, you might make that you might cure that person, but then make them predisposed to weight gain.
Mm. Yeah. So
changing the flora is important.
Changing the flora. You
know, addressing the flora with probiotics, addressing the flora with diet change, you know.
Possibly some probiotic foods, things like that.
Prebiotic. Keeping,
prebiotic
and probiotic.
Prebiotic and probiotic. I would really start simply in the house, making sure that healthy snacks are available. I got a great idea, and this was from a patient who's a mother, because I'm not a mother. And she said, all I have available in the house for my kids who are young children, all under the age of 12, is there's always a crudité platter sitting on the counter, kitchen counter, or the dining room table with either some guacamole or some hummus as a dip, not some ranch dressing or whatever, like that. There's always fresh fruit available. There are nuts and seeds available for those kids who are not allergic to nuts. This is what's available and what's around, and what the family is eating for dinner is what everybody is eating for dinner. No ifs, ands, or buts. No kids' meal. No special children's menu or anything like that.
Right.
And really keeping all the junk food and the soda out of the house is probably one of the best things to do. I remember even as a kid, you know, once in a while, maybe twice a month, we'd walk down to the local Carvel on a Sunday after dinner for ice cream or something like that, which was
fun. It was really a special treat.
It's novel. Yeah. It's novel. Yeah. But when you've got the gallon in the freezer at home,
it's like, oh my God,
really
we're out of ice cream.
Let's have some.
There's an ice storm.
Today.
Let me go to the 7-Eleven quick and get a gallon of ice cream because for the next 18 hours, we might not be able to leave the house.
Exactly. Bread, milk, and ice cream.
Ice cream, right. And booze.
And booze, exactly. Yeah. So
that's what you notice, by the way. I was walking on the street before the nor'easter hit last week.
Yeah.
And you know, there are people making a beeline for the liquor store because they knew they had to hunker down and like, you know, batten down the hatches. So it was like getting a little hooch and, you know, turn on, you know, get the
binge watch some Netflix,
the DVR, and it's all good.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So, Mike, advice is don't address your 9-year-old granddaughter, you know, directly about any of this. It's never a good idea psychologically to make an issue of a child's weight. It's the best approach, and this is according to the scientific literature, and I wrote about this, it's on dearhoffman.com, is to make sure that the family, the entire family, is eating a well-balanced, healthy diet, and to make those foods always available in the home and not the snack foods and sodas and juices and so forth. So that is really the best place to start. And Mike, the other thing, your granddaughter, if she's not already started to menstruate, as so many girls are starting to earlier and earlier, she's about to hit a growth spurt where she may, over the next 3 or 4 years, climb a half a foot in height. So, in stature, and that's something. And it could be that her body is gearing up. Maybe that's what some of that chubbiness is about before that growth spurt. So that's why this tender age, I don't like to go too far.
I like that approach otherwise you feed the monster, and you know, food obsession, you know, cuts both ways. Is you know, on the one hand, stigmatizing foods can cause people to develop an eating disorder where they you know, restrict to the point where it's just untenable, and then they just blow it up, and you know, it's, you know, the little expression is, there once was a little girl, when she was good, she was very, very good, and when she was bad, she was very, very bad. It's like that yo-yo ambivalence that causes people to, you know, starve and binge. But I, you know, have this very, scholarly, article in the New England Journal of Medicine, I think last week, which I made sure I read. Very, you know, a scientific review with, let's see, 79 references. And it speaks to the complexity and magnitude of the problem of obesity and all the physiological mechanisms that are involved and how it can really be a vicious cycle leading to many illnesses. They say that 7 of 10 of the major causes of health problems in the United States are due to obesity. Seven of the top 10 leading causes of death and disability in the United States today are chronic diseases, for example, cancer and diabetes, which are potentially related to obesity. Mm-hmm. People who are overweight or obese account for more than 2/3 of the U.S. population. They're obviously the people who end up more going to doctors. And so I just read this little paragraph here, is a conclusion of this article where they basically are saying this is tough. Creating the conditions for healthy living in our modern environment, including prevention of obesity, is one of the great challenges for humankind. Mm-hmm. Practitioners alone, when caring for affected patients, cannot manage all the pathways leading to the genesis of excess adiposity, but can proceed with the knowledge that the management interventions described here are likely to benefit the patients who receive them. Well, they talk about drugs, they talk about behavioral changes, and so on. Mm-hmm. They don't talk about the microbiome. They don't talk too much about, you know, ketogenic diets, because it's, you know, kind of mainstream medical journal. They say much more effort must be devoted to both the prevention and treatment of obesity as part of the global campaign to rein in the chronic disease epidemic. You know, you want Obamacare, you want Trump care? No, we need real health care where we address the cause of the problem.
Yes.
You know, more health care is not the answer to our health problems. I mean, look, clearly there's some people who die for want of proper diagnosis and treatment, but the bigger problem is what's driving these diseases, and we're not consecrating enough effort to nipping them in the bud.
And coming full circle, coming back to almost the beginning of the podcast in part one, is why doctors need to make referrals to qualified nutritionists on how to tackle diet, on how to tackle fuel. There's another mention I want to make to Mike. Mike, please go to ellensatter.com. That's Ellen with a Y, E-L-L-Y-N, Satter, S-A-T-T-E-R.com. She does a wonderful, wonderful job of how to feed your children without creating an eating disorder. She really does a great job of that.
And so I would also recommend a book, you know, for parents, which is a very interesting scientific book, but it's told in a very easy-to-understand way. It's called The First Bite, and I'm looking it up here to see if there's a website. It's a wonderful book, but it really speaks to the issue of you got to start in the beginning. You know, it's sometimes if once
the formative years,
yeah,
that's where it's imprinted. It's very hard to change dietary habits.
It's called First Bite: How We Learn to Eat by B. Wilson, and it's an excellent book.
Wonderful.
So I recommend it very highly.
Mike, best of luck to you and your granddaughter and your family. Thank you for writing.
Okay, well, that wraps it up for today's edition of Q&A with Layla as part of our Intelligent Medicine series. And a reminder, you can get more information by going to drhoffman.com, and you can subscribe to our newsletter. Please patronize our store for supplements that we personally curate, and we vouch for their quality as well as their reasonable prices, and thereby ensure that you will continue to get free information like this.
Yep. Thank you for joining us, everyone.
I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine.